B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Where do you think the Bruins are heading?
I think that Las Vegas is almost locked in, I would say, just based on everything you hear, the sort of the complex, what they can do, the hotels, as you guys mentioned. And then I'm sticking with Columbus. I think Columbus is another one that makes sense just because of the fact they have Ohio State right there. And if you're going to have a true playoff format, I think that you can't have only two games a night per se. So you may need a second rink there, which is why Columbus makes sense.
Agenda Free Friday here on Felger and Mads. Again, Mike out today. Jim Murray's alongside Matt McCarthy here to give us headlines. Agenda Free Friday, driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. You heard Ty Anderson there, who was with us earlier in the week, saying that he believes that the NHL plan going forward here, as you know, the NBA in Orlando, the NHL, Ty believes will almost certainly be Las Vegas, presumably for West Conference teams, and that Eastern Conference teams will be playing in Columbus, which brings us to the Bruins and the development with regard to the NHL playoff structure this week. The news came out yesterday, Jim Murray, that the teams will be reseeded from round to round, meaning that if the Bruins should remain the top seed in the East, they are guaranteed of playing the last seed all the way through, or at least through the Eastern Conference, and that they would, you know, quote unquote, have home ice, which would give them the right for last change throughout the playoffs. And as opposed to the bracket system that the NHL has implemented, where you had to play yourself out of your division for the last few years, Cam Neely was in favor of this particular scenario. This is a something we did not necessarily touch on yesterday, but the Bruins were annoyed with the round-robin format that they would have to play to maintain that position as top seed, despite having the best regular season of all teams in the NHL this year. This part of it, though, is good news for the Bruins. And just to refresh everyone's memory, Cam Neely did a teleconference many days ago where he expressed his displeasure with the format, but he was hopeful that teams would reseed in the playoffs and that the top seeds would play the lowest remaining seeds, which is now precisely what has happened. In any case, here's how that exchange went.
You mentioned other scenarios. Is there one that you would have preferred to see?
I was okay with 24 teams. I understand, and understood why they kind of landed on 24. I just would have liked it without the round robin for the top four seeds is all.
Do you have a preference on the reseeding or the bracket?
Based on how playoffs has gone the last few years, I've kind of been a proponent of reseeding. I think it speaks a little bit more to how successful your regular season was.
Okay, so the reason I raise this again now, Murray, is that now we have a better understanding of how the NBA picture is going to work. And you heard Charles Barkley ask a question to Adam Silver earlier in the show today. We played it for you, where Barkley said to Silver, you know, these injured guys are going to be allowed to come back. And Silver said, look, there was no perfectly fair scenario. So, and this was true in all the sports, Murray. There was no perfectly fair scenario that was going to keep everybody happy. So when you now weigh out what the NHL has, that the Bruins have to play four round-robin games, that they will likely end up as one of the top couple of seeds, that they still have a chance to be that top seed, and that they will play teams that are the lowest remaining seed if they are in that spot. Did they come out in good shape or bad?
Theoretically, they came out in good shape. But I say bad if they end up having to play Montreal, because I'm with Mike on this, given the history and given how everything has gone this year. If they play Montreal, they'll lose.
McCarthy, you?
I'm not concerned about the Canadians one bit. If the Bruins have an historically good regular season, you know, one of the best regular seasons they had ever had, and then lose to the Canadians, who have been awful this year, I mean, you have no excuses. I think the Bruins came out fine in this, Maz. I get that they're unhappy with the round robin. They feel they should be the top seed overall because they were the President's Trophy winner. I understand that. I would also say to them, you got how many breaks last year and you couldn't take advantage? So I wouldn't necessarily focus on the breaks that you're getting and the breaks that you're not getting. Go out there. Don't take the foot off the gas. Play through that round robin, stay the top seed, and then take advantage of the reseed. Because if they stay as the top seed after that round robin, I mean, they're sitting pretty. If they don't have to see Washington or Tampa until the final, that would be, until the conference finals, that would be a big break for the Bruins. So I don't want to hear them complaining about it.
So, Murray, here's what I'm getting at. Okay, here's what I'm getting at. You have the commissioner of the NBA in an interview last night saying there were no good scenarios here. We were picking from a bunch of flawed things. In the case of the Bruins, the biggest sacrifice that they have made is that they're going to have to play a round-robin tournament, four games, or actually it's three, isn't it, against a three remaining seed, yeah. top seeds in the conference. They'll play three games, and if they go 2-1, in all probability, they will be the top seed of the East because they hold all the tiebreakers. And they will come out of it facing the team with the lowest remaining seed in the conference up until the Eastern Conference Finals, and through the Eastern Conference Finals. The Bruins, if you ask me, in a very bad environment for trying to finish leagues, came out of this thing great. Great. They're in great shape. It's in their hands. If they play well in the round robin, the road will line up for them to go to the cup. It'll line up for them to go there. So given what Silver had said, which is absolutely true, I just think it's a good time to revisit the way it shook out in the NHL and how that affects the Bruins. And it is golden for the Bruins. It is a great, great setup, all things considered. So I would hope, and I think that at the end of the day, the Bruins know this, but I think Cam Neely should be happy about it. Let's go to Matt in Rhode Island. Matt, what do you got?
So I don't think the owners are taking anywhere near enough blame for the current product that we see in Major League Baseball. Because in the summer of 2015, they started juicing the ball. And in the last 5 years, from 2014 to 2019, they have a 62% increase in home runs. There's 2,590 home runs were hit last year that were not there in 2014. And that's incentivizing the ball never going in play, because the more home runs there are, the more strikeouts and walks there are going to be, because they're going to be sitting around waiting for all of those home runs to happen.
So Matt, this is a good point, because I have said that I think the game on the field stinks, and I put a lot of that on the players, mostly as it relates to pace of play. But the analytics do factor in, what the teams are preaching factor in, and home runs are definitely a part of it. So you're saying that maybe a solution for baseball, is the converse true, that maybe a solution for baseball going forward is to take a little bit of the juice out of the ball?
That's one of the things they need to do, but they also need to incentivize getting rid of striking out by either, you know, maybe a foul out of an NBA game, maybe you can strike out of an MLB game. They need to incentivize hitters to swing the bat, put the ball in play. But the juicing of the ball absolutely makes them not swing the bat, because they know that they can hit the ball 450 feet if they connect with one. Whereas, you know, and here's something quickly. In 30 years ago, it was only 10 guys who had 150 plate appearances who struck out 25% of the time or more. Last year, 148 of them. Everybody is striking out now. So the ball's never going into play. That's the issue.
Okay, so yeah, and that does all relate to the analytics. They strike out more because they swing more for home runs. I mean, really, it's striking. To me, one of the core problems of the game, the ball's not in play enough. No doubt about it. Jordan's in Florida on the Celtics and Jason Tatum. Get Jordan.
Do you guys think Jason Tatum has or will eventually have the killer mindset that Kobe and Michael Jordan had? Because to me, he comes off as a chill, mellow guy, but I think he has the talent to make clutch shots. But what do you guys think?
Murray, where are you on Jason Tatum?
He was showing that for a good part of a month before the lockdown. I mean, he was turning himself into a killer instinct, you know, one of the top players in the league, top 10 in the league, which I thought he would have been last year. So I think he's got it. But then again, the lockdown happens, and he didn't have a net to shoot on there for the first month and a half, whatever it was. So I don't know. Maybe I'm fooling myself, but what I saw there for 4 weeks before everything got shut down.
So, Matt, I'm not sure I've ever actually asked you, are you a Tatum fan or no?
I am a Tatum fan. And listen, the Celtics, more importantly, they need him to be that guy, because if they're going to take that step from really good team to, you know, championship level team, you need a legitimate number one. And Tatum, as far as legitimate championship number ones, is the only guy that they have that I feel like can truly be that killer mentality, need a shot at the end of the game. It's Tatum one-on-one. Does he sink it or not? Like that's ultimately what it comes down to. And I felt that way for a long time about Tatum. I'm a fan, but I mean, that's a big ask. It's like when the caller says, well, is he going to have a killer mentality like Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant, two of the greatest players in the history of the NBA? Like, I don't know, we can temper those expectations just a little bit, but sure, he does need to have that sort of element. Yes, I would agree.
So while we're on this topic, it popped up in the last few days, Murray, that the Celtics are expected to give Jason Tatum a maximum contract over the summer. Would you have any reservations about that?
No, none whatsoever.
Matt?
Likewise. Give it to him. Give him all the money right now.
I mean, to me, I don't see how you can't. To me, that's one of those where, what are your alternatives? Piss him off? Let him go to free, you know. No. And not that he could go to free agency now, but to me, absolutely. That's how it works in that league. You hit on the pick. The players made big strides. He had LeBron James was singing his praises on Instagram after the Celtics played the Lakers, and that's that trip that Tatum was absolutely lighting people up. And so, to me, at that stage, it was becoming more and more clear that Jason Tatum is probably going to be one of the top 20 players in the league.
I mean,
if not higher than that.
I think he already is.
Well, yeah, if Ben Simmons can get 5 years, 170, why shouldn't Jason Tatum, or whatever that number is going to end up being? Because in terms of the offense, Tatum's a hell of a lot better player than Ben Simmons is.
McCarthy, did you have something to add there?
No, I was saying I think Tatum already is a top 20 player in the league. I mean, I think we've already reached that point. I'm ready to say that.
Okay, 617-779-0985 on Agenda Free Friday. A lot has happened in the NBA in recent days. This feels like a good time to bring on Celtics owner Wick Grousbeck to talk about the NBA playoff structure, how the Celtics feel about it, the direction of the franchise, and certainly ongoing events that following the murder, for lack of a better word, and that's what it was, of George Lloyd in Minneapolis, all of that. We'll get to Wick. He's next.
Sports. Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Say it.
Oh, I didn't say that. Yes, you did.
Yes, they did.
Well, you said it. You said it. I can prove that you said it. You said it.
It's Felger and Mass. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So the NBA is going to play July 31st. It's 22 teams. It's complicated. They have an emergency destination. It feels a little gimmicky. They're trying to figure out what to do. Like, if you're a one seed, like Milwaukee, and you worked hard to be a one seed, what advantages do you get now there's no home court? Here's some of the things they've talked about. The higher seeded team would be awarded the first possession of the second, third, and fourth quarters following the traditional jump ball. The higher seeded team being allowed to designate one player to be able to be whistled for 7 fouls instead of 6. The higher seeded team being able to transport their actual hardwood home court from their arena to Orlando. Oh, good hell. Okay. My head is on fire. Gimmicky, complicated. Don't complicate things for sports fans. Like you just got to keep things. We're simple. We're simple men here. Just first down and 10, third down and 1. You can't give too much. One person can save this season. One. LeBron James.
Played that for you yesterday, Colin Cowherd, Fox Sports 1, talking about the NBA scenario here going forward. It feels like a good time to bring in Wick Grousbeck, owner of the Celtics, who joins us now in the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. And Wick, the first and most obvious question, well, first of all, thank you for joining us. But
Hey, Matt, how are you?
Good. Good. The first and most obvious question, with the way this thing shook out, and I know the Celtics were among the 29 teams that voted in favor of this proposal, but all things considered, are you satisfied with the way this all shook out? Is this what you wanted from the beginning?
This is actually, that was just clickbait, the Colin Cowherd. That was just making noise, because this is actually the most simple and fair and easiest to understand of all the alternatives we had. If you just go straight to the playoffs with 16, it's not fair. You know, we're only 80% through the regular season, and it seems more fair to to allow these sort of 9th and 10th place teams to see if they can pass 8th seed in the standings. So we're playing some regular season games according to the schedule, according to the teams that are down there who are on your schedule. So it's already scheduled games, basically. We're playing 8 games apiece and then shake it out 1-8 and play. I mean, it couldn't be any more simple. So, but moving on from that, I'm glad to be hoping to come back. We've still got steps to take. We're in partnership with the players and going through all of this with them and reaching accommodations and middle ground to make sure everybody's happy with how everything shakes out. But this is the proposal we're going to put forward, and we're really excited about it.
Okay, so Wick, one of the things I want to ask, too, with the regard to the playoff structure, and you said this is the most fair. We played a cut from Adam Silver a little while ago where Adam said that Michael Jordan, among others, was pretty adamant that the playoffs should remain intact, that is, you know, the most protects the integrity of the league because that is typically how the postseason is run, and that he was – you know, he was very vocal with regard to that. A, just wanted your perspective on Jordan's involvement in that, and what kind of owner is he? Is he someone that typically speaks up like that?
Well, when he speaks up, we all listen. You're talking about my tequila partner, by the way, in Sincoro Tequila, but we'll just leave that plug for another time. But he is he's a champion for a reason, a 6-time champion and the GOAT for a reason. He's amazing. As a person, he's amazing. And when he speaks up, we all listen, and he is the chairman of the labor committee, as a matter of fact, which, you know, many times is the most important committee we have. So a great guy. And his idea of not being gimmicky was not to, you know, go to the soccer style group play-ins or find other ways to let like all 30 teams suddenly compete, even when a bunch of them were already basically eliminated. So or there was no practical chance for them to play. So we're trying to honor the 80% of the games we've played, and then allow the teams that are still within 4 or 5 games that have like a mathematical chance. No one's ever come back with this much left in the season for more than 5 or 5.5 games. So that was where we cut it off, and that makes 22 teams, and we'll go from there.
Wick, given the current state of really everything and how outspoken, and rightfully so, that some of your own players have been in regard to police reform, Black Lives Matter, would you be surprised at all if anyone from Marcus Smart to even a LeBron James, who's the biggest star in your league, takes a look around, they say, you know what, there's more important things going on in the world right now, let alone the fact I'm concerned about catching the virus. So when the time comes to go down to Orlando, and say they've even been practicing, that they just say, you know what, I'm going to sit this out, I'm not doing it.
Well, I wouldn't want to speak for any of those guys. I just spoke with Marcus and Jalen and Jason yesterday and the day before, and we're working together on how to respond to the situation in the country, which is not acceptable, and which I needed to learn more about because I thought things were better than I think they really are. I think I've taken a step back and tried to become more humble about not knowing and needing to learn. And so that's exactly where I stand on that. But in terms of playing down there, we're hoping to play, and the players and the league are going to come together over the next week as partners and figure out what is safe and optimal if we possibly can. So that's still to be done, and so I don't want to speak for any of the players.
So, Wick, I'm glad Murray brought this up because we discussed it on the program the other day that in the case of a guy like Jaylen Brown, who, you know, drives over state lines, goes all the way back to Georgia, and, you know, introduces quarantine issues, right? I mean, now, and I suppose if, and I don't even know if he's back yet. Murray, maybe you do. I should know that, and I don't. But Is his decision to go down there, is that something that he would typically discuss with you ahead of time? Does he need to discuss it with you? Do you not care if he discusses it with you? Like, how does something like that go down?
In fact, he doesn't need to discuss that with us. And if he had, I would have been fully supportive. And in fact, I expressed that to him yesterday and the day before, one way or another. I mean, he knows he's got our support. I posted like the only video of my life this morning on Black Lives Matter because it felt like the right thing to do after talking to our team, and because I've decided that I don't have enough. The Celtics have been leaders in civil rights, respect, equality since the 50s. Leaders, not equal with everybody else, not trailing behind, trying to catch up, but leading it. And these are great people of the past, Red Auerbach, Walter Brown, and then, of course, Bill Russell, Casey Jones, and so on. And so the idea that the Celtics wouldn't take a stand, you know, didn't sit well with anybody, including me. And so we are taking a stand. And so I support Jalen and Marcus and Vincent and Smart, who all marched peacefully the other day.
Wick, in regard to how this thing is structured, and I guess for fairness, was there much pushback with this, with the call, and that there's only one team, you know, that's really coming out of the East that's on one of these bubble teams, the Washington Wizards, and you have more teams like New Orleans and Portland coming out of the West? Were you okay with that? Were other owners, you know, or was there more push from the East to try to get one of the other teams?
I don't want anybody else competing for the playoff spots in the East. I've got one of them, and I'm happy about that. But we're sitting in third, and our question is if we can do well enough in the, and I think our first game is most likely going to be Milwaukee, which ought to be interesting. So, because that's what the schedule looks like just from the current schedule. We don't have the new schedule yet, but we'll probably start right off with Milwaukee. And so we're going to try to move up and we're going to have fun. But in terms of it, the point that seemed the most fair is not to give a team that was lagging farther behind in the East. And that would, for example, be Michael's team, Charlotte.
Yeah.
You know, who are, what, 6 or 7 games back, they shouldn't have like, in the history of the NBA, no one's coming back from 7 games back at this point in the season. And so it's more fair to say no, because we can only take so many teams because of safety. You don't want to have another 500 people down there with multiple teams. It would end up being 500 more people if we had all 30 teams. And we'll just have more of a risk of getting shut down because of the virus. So there was a line to be drawn, and we all decided 29-1 that this was the most fair line.
So Wick, then clearly that line of demarcation was a critical one, right? Like that is something is that something Adam offered up, that, hey, look, historically nobody's ever come back from this sort of deficit in the final weeks to be able to make the playoffs, so we need to cut the line there. Was there any movement in that line at the beginning? Did it start at 4 and it moved to 6, or did it start at 8 and it moved to 6? How did that process evolve? I'm interested by that.
Yeah, there was one scheme of 20 teams with a soccer-style play-in, and then this scheme of 22 teams, and that sort of evolved. There's really a bunch of, a number of very, very smart mathematical types at the league office, and so they put their thinking caps on or fired up the computers. It definitely wasn't me, but they came out with the notion that, you know, at this point in the season, what's the biggest comeback there's ever been? And I think it was 5 games. And so once that fact was brought into the group or in front of everybody, they said, well, if you do 5, 5.5 games, you make it 5.5, it ends up with 22 teams, and we can make that work. So it sort of happened that way. It was somebody better at math than I am figuring that out.
Okay, so again, I'm sorry, go ahead, Murray.
I was going to say, be honest, you have any concerns about anyone showing up fat or way out of shape?
Well, maybe me. I mean, there's some good food. I'm with my wife, who's Italian-American, and her Italian-born mom, and they've been cooking every night, so it's been 80 days of that, so I'm going to have to do a little running.
I was going to say, just based on... I watched your video. I know you need a haircut at the very least.
Well, that'll lose a little weight then. That'll take a couple ounces off.
I was just going to say, Wick, before we let you go, and again, just for those who may have joined in the middle, Wick Rausbeck, Celtics owner, joining us via the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. There are a lot of theories out there that no home court now. I mean, there are a lot of variables introduced here that weren't in existence before this whole thing hit. And you are in a conference with a team that has the best record in the league in Milwaukee. And now if you are to face them in the postseason, you won't have to play on their floor, and they would have had home court. So do you feel at all here, Wick, that there is a better opportunity to win than you might have otherwise had?
Sure. First of all, I had a coach back in college, different sport. I wasn't gifted. I'm not gifted at all in basketball. But who said no matter what happened, that coach would always say, this works to our advantage. And we would buy it. You know, it would be like pouring rain. We were rowing. It was crew, you know, but there'd be white caps, pouring rain, conditions we weren't really used to. And you're like, oh, this works to your advantage. You're the best whitewater crew we've ever seen. You know, you guys are super tough. You can stay focused. You're all seniors, whatever it is. But he makes it so it works to your advantage. But I do believe that this does work to our advantage. First of all, I think it's very hard to come up with a more fair system that is safe. I mean, if you want to play out the season, that'd be fair. But we just can't. We felt like we couldn't have that many people down in Orlando. That's the idea. So given that constraint, we want safety of players to be the paramount concern. Then this seems as fair as we can get. But home court, you know, any uncertainty that it introduces into the system, we're going to make it work to our advantage. I mean, we're hungry. We want it. We're going to go after it.
And just quickly on the issue of home court, Wick, a lot of these scenarios that were tossed around, is there anything that can be done, and how much of a concern was that from the part of the league?
We have not discussed. I'm on the executive committee, and we haven't discussed it on that committee. So there may be discussing it over in the competition committee. I don't really know. And so but I'd be shocked if we did anything, quote unquote, gimmicky to the games. It's not like we sit around saying, oh, thank God the NBA has a big home court advantage. We like the better basketball team to win. And so I don't think it's a huge plus for our sport that we have a pretty notable home court advantage in our games. It's great to have fans real close. It's great to have Boston fans be arguably the best in the league. I mean, that's what everybody says. That's what I feel. So it's fun to be on a home court. It's great. There's nothing like the playoffs. But it's not that we're going to miss it. We're going to go play the games. This is COVID. This isn't a usual, you know, we're not going to sit here and cry about anything. We're going to go play as safely as we can.
Well, so Wick, look, thanks for taking the time. I mean, there's obviously been a lot going on, and not that sports are necessarily at the peak of everyone's consciousness, but, you know, clearly the establishment here of a format, I thought it was a good time to bring you on, get your two cents on it, and thanks for taking the time to join us.
Well, just one more very quick thing. I know you're out of time, or I am, but we're going to try to use this sport to make a statement and to keep moving the ball forward, you know, on social issues as well. And that's what the Celtics have always stood for. So not to make too much out of some basketball games, but we're trying to see it as a positive. Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Wick.
All right. Thanks a lot, Wick. Again, Wick Grosbeck, owner of the Celtics, joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Agenda-free Friday, so we'll get back to your calls here. Largely caller-driven. If you have some thought on what Wick just offered up here, by all means, 617-779-0985. Matt McCarthy has got your headlines, and then we will return to your outstanding, as always, phone calls.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Mass.
Oh.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
With these Bundesliga games, is it just that the road teams are able to pick up on defensive tendencies or changes because it's not as loud, or is it because the home team is just sad because it's not the same atmosphere? Because I feel like it's the latter.
It's actually the latter. It actually is the latter because you don't gain that extra, you know, I hate using the percentages, but 7 to 10% from the crowd being behind you. When you watch Dortmund play, here's an example. Behind the goal, Borussia Dortmund has 45,000 fans. It's the black and yellow wall.
Yep. Wow.
Bayern, Schalke, those teams go there. You've now gained an advantage because you're not seeing 65,000 breathing. It really is, no pun intended, the home team being sad with the situation and completely deflating it. But the ambiance and the energy is such a huge part of this sport. It's eerily similar to American football. What's going to be interesting for me, guys, is what does the NBA playoffs look like with no crowds? Like, are you really going to do the just regular audio from squeaks and saying, hey, pick left, pick right, get under, get over? Like, after 72 games, Felger, I'm over that.
Yeah.
I'd rather have like some rap music going on or something.
So I don't know what it is about that cracks me up, but I hear Taylor Twellman say that the team, home team, shows up and they are sad because they don't have fans in the crowd. Murray, tell me that doesn't make you laugh. Every time I hear that cut, I laugh.
Yeah, it's, well, it's just the reality of it because it seems so silly, but I don't know. I get it. You know, you're not going to. So, you know, there was a thing that went kind of viral locally from our friend Boston Sports Imp. He talked about it was like, I think, 21 years to the day of Pedro's 16 strikeout game against the Atlanta Braves, which I was at. And I will tell you firsthand, and Maz, you were covering the team at the time, I believe. It's like one of the most five most electric sporting events I've ever attended. Without the fans, what is that? It's still right. An incredible feat, but it's not the moment that it was. So. Yeah, I can understand why a guy like Pedro that day without the fans would be a little sad. Or these German soccer players go out there and they're expecting to hear that roar and the songs that you normally hear in European soccer, and it's just nothing. Yeah, I'd be a little bit bummed out by that.
So look, this is one of the things about as sports return that's going to be really, really different. Is that, and when I say different, I don't just mean aesthetically, Murray, and we have to pump in fake crowd noise in the background so we can enjoy it sitting on our sofas. I mean competitively, it is going to be interesting to see how this all shakes out. It's why some people are theorizing in the NBA that you got to come up with these cockamamie rules to somehow give an advantage back to the home teams. It's just that is not going to happen. But the home team does draw energy from the home crowd. There's no two ways about it. Now, look, it doesn't – in hockey, it can go the other way. So in hockey, it can absolutely – the life can get sucked out of a team. And I would say if any of the other three remaining sports are at all like that, I think baseball can be a little like that from this standpoint, that if you get a guy who shows up in your stadium and, you know, starts to pitch well, like the life can start to get sucked out of that crowd. I can see it because they just say, we're not going to touch this guy tonight. We're not going to touch him. He's just too hard to beat. And so it can completely suck the energy out of a ballpark.
And in the case of hockey, just look at Game 7 between the Bruins and Blues last year after that second goal in the first period. The game, for all intents and purposes, in terms of the crowd, was over.
Oh, totally. The home crowd gets terrified. Like, uh-oh, we're down one zip. And particularly with the Blues, who were so good at protecting a lead and so good defensively that you knew. Now, the other sports, to me, are a little different. The NBA, we know the home court advantage is huge. And we've already pointed out a million times the Patriots are going to open their first two road games, Seattle and Kansas City. So, but with no fans, what are those places like? And how much of a... how much difference is that really going to make? And when Taylor Twellman tells you, as he did in this cut, that the NFL is watching, he knows. He knows. Twellman talks to a lot of different people, and he knows. And I do believe that the leagues have been in constant contact with one another throughout this whole process. In some cases because they needed to coordinate schedules and whatnot, but also B, because they wanted to get a grasp on having to handle it. It's an unprecedented situation. And I guarantee you the NFL is watching those soccer games over in Germany to try to get a sense of the impact of home field. Let's take a couple more calls quickly. Just a quick reminder or a quick programming note. We have new Fuppets. I forgot to mention this earlier. New Fuppets. We'll play it for you here at the end of the next segment, just before the top of the hour. We'll play it again for you later on in the show in the event that you miss it. But if Hardy's work in the past is at all any indication, it's something you want to stick around for. Dan's in New Hampshire. Dan, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to bring something up that I've been thinking about it with everything changing and, you know, these sports schedules changing. Why have the original timeline, say for baseball, NFL, and stuff like that, their summers, their start times been that way? I mean, do you guys know anything about the history? Because I think what's going to change might be better. You're going to have more things in the middle of the summer that playoffs for NHL, basketball. Just kind of curious as to why all the leagues start when they start.
Okay, so Dan, to me, it's pretty elementary. It's about allowing people to get home from work and watch on TV, giving them enough time to get home from work, have some dinner, and watch on TV. And I'm giving you the elementary, the simplest version of it. But Murray, am I missing anything?
No, I didn't know if he meant actual start time in regard to the the clock or where it is in the calendar.
I think he was talking more season-based, like, you know, the NHL playing in the summer, as he said. I think that's more what he was referencing.
And if he means it by that, like the calendar, I'm with him. I think this is going to be kind of interesting and maybe even beneficial for some of these leagues going forward. Like, I really like the NBA, love the NBA at times, but I do think there's too much inventory. So, you know, I was into that whole thing prior to the pandemic that was being talked about with the MIT Sloan Conference. Sloan Analytics Conference, where the guy that's in one of the heads of the Atlanta Hawks was looking for the season to start around Christmas, because most casual fans really start to pay attention to the NBA with that big Christmas slate with all those big games, and then the league really starts to pick up. October, November in the league, yeah, I mean, we're especially paying attention because of what we do for a living, but most casual fans, it's all about football at that point. So I think for the NBA, it'd be great if they started around Christmas or in December.
Well, and under this proposal, Murray, the next season would begin on December 1st.
Right.
Right. So, you know, this would, you know, now they would, they'd end up finishing at the same time, but the league has talked about playing in the summer before, as we have discussed. Mark's in Florida. Mark, go.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Two quick pad points, then I'll hang up. First is, if Edelman wants to go see his boys down in Tampa, what do you think we could get back in a trade package for him? And second is, with how the Pats roster is shaping up, I think we need to get Cordarrelle Patterson back. What do we got to do? Thanks, guys.
Okay. God. I couldn't give a rat's ass. Should I even take either one of those questions seriously? Murray, would you trade Edelman?
No, because you're going to get what for him? A fifth rounder at best, maybe, given his age and how much he's been beaten up and his drop numbers. And I love Edelman, but they're not great. What do you have, 9 last year? So you're not going to get much in return for Edelman. So get that out of your head, because you might overrate him a little bit.
I also do like the idea of keeping Edelman around.
Yeah.
So that
you need a safety valve guy.
Yeah, someone's got to be there to help bring Stidham along. You got to give Stidham something. And at the other positions, you do have a lot, and I'm talking about the pass catching positions now, you have a lot of inexperience there. So the idea of having a veteran go-to guy there that can really help the quarterback and bring him along, to me, is an important thing. Randy's in Fall River on the NBA and Home Court Advantage. Go ahead, Randy.
Yeah, well, this goes for all the home teams, you know, in any sport. They record the crowd noise all the time, and it would be so super easy. Like, you know, you got the PA guy and the organ playing. Just have them push a button, you know, and they got just the regular crowd noise going on. And then, you know, when something big happens, they get the big applause. They can have all the songs and whatever they want. The booze coming to the visiting team. They could do that all with one person on a soundboard.
Okay, so Murray, we've talked about adding artificial sound to the broadcasts of these games so that if you're sitting at home and you hear crowd noise in the background, it just is a more familiar experience. Felger said he hates it, but what about the idea of actually pumping crowd noise into the arena, Murray?
Yeah, fine. I mean, especially if they should talk to the players and see if they want it. If they're for it, they should do it. I want all the fake crowd noise. Fake it up.
So, see, this part I'm against. This is this part is, you want to put it on the broadcast, I have no problem with it. It's not affecting the game on the floor. And so I don't think you should introduce fake crowd noise into the arena. I don't. I think that they should play it the way that they play it. McCarthy, you have an opinion on that?
I actually want to see it without the fake crowd noise. I want to get the different experience, because it's not going to be like this forever. So I'm willing to embrace change for a short period of time. Let me hear these guys swear at each other on the court. I want to hear that. That's what I want to hear.
617-779-0985. We'll continue with your calls. And remember, coming up in the next segment, a new Puppets. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Mass. Way more than just a sports talk radio show.
This truly is the apocalypse.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Let me tell y'all something right now. And Max, get that smirk off your face, because you know where I'm going. Max, get that smirk off your face for right now. Max, get that smirk off your face. Let me tell y'all something. All of this stuff. Oh, let me bring the home court to Orlando. Oh, extra fouls.
I knew you was going to say something about that.
Stop it. And all of this gimmicky nonsense. What the hell? hell is going on? I mean, we got Dear Abby running the sport or something. What's going on? What's going on? They better not do this stuff. Look, I am a proponent of this. You take the tag, the emblem that you put at midcourt or whatever, and plaster it on the damn midcourt. And get one of them, what is it made of, rubber or plaster? Just plaster it at midcourt. All right, that's the home team. Let's play basketball. What's all of this nonsense going on here? We got to modify rules and engage in gimmickry. Y'all had off a couple of months. You're professional athletes. You're still getting paid. We haven't been playing. We got to resume the damn sport, probably without fans in attendance. Get your behind on the damn court and play basketball if you going to play all of this bringing courts into Orlando and all. Stop! We don't need all of that. That's additional people working, by the way, which just debunks the whole social distancing issue and talk about safety, which is supposed to be our primary concern. Look, just get on the court and play, if that's what you go do. All of this gimmick stuff and looking for an advantage, oh, we got to take care of the team that had the best record. Stop! It's an aberration. History, we all know what's happened here with this pandemic. Just ball.
Stephen A. Smith, whom I always find wildly entertaining. It does bring me to a question, though, from Murray, of all people. Because, Murray, we've had Stephen A. on as a guest at the Super Bowl a number of times over the years, some of which you've been there for, right? Met him?
The Philly one, yeah.
Okay, had you ever met Stephen A. before your appearances on the show?
No. That was my first time, the Super Bowl in Minnesota.
Okay, so my question to you is, what was your opinion of him before you met him, and what is your opinion of him now?
I've always thought he was wildly entertaining. The more passionate he gets about the stuff that I know he really cares about, like his beloved New York Knicks, I think the better the rant. But I just like, he's one of those dudes that like he was like a bigger guy than I thought. Like, you know, he looms large on TV, but just from an aesthetic standpoint, like he was a big dude.
Oh yeah. No. He's tall. Yeah. He's tall. There's no question about it. And I'll tell you, I was stunned one of the first times I met him, cause he's an unbelievably gracious gentleman. I do not use that word lightly. A lot of people, you know, obviously have never met him. And believe me when I tell you, he is as, polite a human being as I think I've ever met. I think the world of the guy. I think he's great. Not that that matters regard to his work or as it relates to his work. But when he gets rolling, man, it's hard not to wet yourself, frankly. Like, I just think he's near the top of the list. So here's what we're going to do, because we're up against the top of the hour. Gasper is standing by. I'm assuming Jimmy Stewart is Gasper there.
I have yet to see him.
Yeah. Oh, there's a shock.
Yeah, it's usual. Gasper coming in late, I'm sure.
Okay, so Gasper's supposed to be here at 4 o'clock. Again, I am broadcasting from home here today. Murray and Matt McCarthy are in studio, along with Jimmy Stewart and Billy Lanny. Gasper should be prancing his Louis Vuitton ass through the front door any second now. But we do have a new Fuppets for you, produced by Hardy. Jimmy, can you give me a little tease on what the topic is?
It's something that I don't think we're accepting callers for from the show anymore.
Oh, anymore? Oh, okay. All right. Then I know what it is.
One of five different things.
Yes. So we'll play this for you again later on in the show in the event that you miss it. But here's Hardy's latest Fuppets. It'll be followed by Matt McCarthy, who will get you caught up on all the headlines. And then hopefully by then, Gasper will have made it through traffic after stopping at Saks Fifth Avenue and will be here to offer anything and everything on things we've discussed during the course of the week. Anyway, here's the latest Fuppets.
Keith in Vermont. Go ahead, Keith.
I think that they might be tanking to get Trevor Lawrence. They've got a ton of picks they could package.
Here we go. They're not going to tank for Trevor Lawrence. They're not going to suck bad enough to get the pick, and their division's not good enough for them to get the pick.
Just so many reasons why they're not going to tank. I don't want to lose my mind. I'd like to get to put this on a loop, and so Jimmy can just press a button. There's just so many reasons they're not going to do it.
I take one.
One, Belichick wants to catch Shula.
Two,
prove he can win without Brady.
Three,
the division still blows.
Four,
the coaching still blows.
Five.
Should we keep going? Like, how many reasons do you need to know they're not going to tank for Trevor Lawrence?
Yeah, but what about that saying, one step forward, two steps back?
Oh, my God, it's 2020 so ridiculous.
Two steps back.
Oh, God, please.
You tank it.
God, please, would you stop it?
win never for Trevor.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.